You are listening to Sid Weighs In, where Tuck School business professor, associate dean for executive education, and an expert on strategy and leadership, Sidney Finkelstein, shares his views on what leaders are doing, why they are doing it, and whether it makes sense for them and for you.
This is Sidney Finkelstein, and I'm here to do another podcast on my BBC columns today on the cable industry. And today we also have our guest host, Ashley Hovey. Good morning, Ashley.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks.
So we're talking about the cable industry today, and when you heard about that, you said, I want to be the guest host. Why is that?
Well, I have to tell you, I'm currently at the Tuck School of Business, but when I graduate in a few months, I am joining British Telecom, who traditionally has done the big red boxes in London for years that everyone knows them by, but most recently has been making big moves in the cable industry.
They're the ones that had those phone booths everywhere?
Oh, yeah. That's legacy business.
Do they have that in the Smithsonian of the UK, whatever that might be?
They do. They even actually have it for sale now, where you can put them in your houses as, like, couches and decorations. It's pretty interesting.
I should get myself one of those.
Yeah, they're pretty great.
It's kind of like when the old Yankee Stadium was being sold off. I never did get a seat.
That would be, it wouldn't fit in my living room, but maybe yours.
Maybe. let me talk about the column and then kind of get into our conversation about it. It's about cable companies and it's why they can be kind of annoying sometimes. You can have whatever you want, just as long as you buy it the way we sell it. Top managers in cable and satellite companies are the Henry Fords of modern times. Ford famously said of his cars, you could have any color you want, so long as it was black. Cable television purveyors sell packages of channels representing pre-selected bundles of content that maximize their revenue. And for many customers, it maximizes their anger. What would happen if this changed? It's not really such a far-fetched idea. That battle not that long ago between Time Warner Cable and CBS Broadcast Network in the U.S. may ultimately involve some a la carte offerings to customers. Would this be the disaster cable companies have been avoiding for years, or will it create maybe new opportunities for them? Do they even have a choice? First, some perspective. There is an incredible array of content available to users, from media, news, and entertainment, to include ideas and products and services. We have even more to consider, but there's also a fundamental inefficiency in connecting sellers of all that content to buyers who might want it. Sellers and buyers have only limited knowledge of the other's existence. It's difficult to determine the specific tastes and preferences of the many kinds of buyers. Add to that the wide range of content, the varying quality of that content, and its relative availability, and you get inefficiency. This is how markets form, literally as a place where buyers and sellers come together to trade. Open markets, though, suffer from information asymmetries. You don't always know what I've got to sell, how good it is, and even whether it's legitimately mine to offer. Anyone who could help reduce this uncertainty can add value to customers. When you think about it this way, it's incredible how many market makers actually provide us with valuable services. Market makers not only extract a price for their service, but they also wrestle control of access to content from us in the process. Who are we thinking about? Curators, aggregators, wikis, companies like Google that exploit big data, and assorted experts have all emerged to make sense of open markets of content in ways that add value to end users, in exchange for either giving up direct access to content or for a fee or both. Usually the consumer pays, like cable TV. Sometimes the seller pays, Amazon vendors, and sometimes no one pays, Wikipedia. When consumers benefit, they usually don't mind giving up direct access. In fact, they welcome it. The paradox of choice holds that when people have almost unlimited choices, they have more difficulty deciding than when the choices are managed for them. Professional curators suggest content that fits what we like. Museum curators develop collections that reflect some of their own values and preferences and that of the intended audience. Universities have been doing this for years, of course, with professors creating content in syllabi for students. The Huffington Post is an obvious aggregator of content, but so are department stores like Macy's that bring a large collection of designers under one roof. Shopping malls and high streets have been doing this for decades. BBC Capital is assembling columnists such as myself to deliver content to readers. User-generated content is wider than wikis, collections of information that rely on user-created content. We rely on TripAdvisor, Yelp, countless other apps to help us decide what to purchase when there are a multitude of choices. And, of course, companies such as Google, Amazon, Facebook, and actually much of the advertising industry have developed analytics that aim to offer goods and services tailored to our interests and past behavior. That brings us back to cable and satellite companies. They are also curators of content, but their algorithm is based on maximizing revenue, not maximizing value for customers. The best content providers always try to go directly to end users with a single-serve offering. First-run movies play in theaters first. Major boxing matches are shown on TV via pay-per-view. But the best content providers also want to maximize their returns, so they'll often appear as part of a bundle of content. Managers of designer stores don't only want to be on Fifth Avenue or the High Street, but also inside department stores, for example. When content providers have alternative outlets, they'll go to them. And that's what's starting to happen today. Broadband allows TV shows to be available directly to consumers via smartphones, tablets, and laptops. I mean, look what just happened during the Winter Olympics in Sochi, where broadband was delivering over the internet all kinds of things, basically most of the competition live. During the 2012 Summer Olympics, NBC in the United States and CTV in Canada did exactly the same thing, so that is growing. When you give individual consumers extensive choice, they will value curation even more. That's the irony in what's happening in the cable industry today. Rather than protect to the death their control of how content is distributed, executives and cable companies fail to see that selling channels a la carte before Verizon, Netflix, Apple, Google, or who knows who else does so is a huge opportunity. One could also envision offering consumers the option of buying a single episode, just like Apple's iTunes enables downloads of individual songs. If it's going to happen eventually anyways, why wouldn't you want to take a leading position before your competitors do? Do that first, then be clever about how to bundle, curate, or otherwise aggregate content after becoming free from past assumptions and arrangements to maximize viewer experience. Museums, Wikipedia, Amazon.com, and department stores have figured out how to solve the paradox of too many choices in a way that adds value to them and to consumers. It's time for executives at cable and satellite companies to change the channel. There you have it.
Thanks a lot, Sid. So what would be one of the things that you would say to the new merger of Comcast and NBC? So we have a media company delivering and we have a media company creating. I mean, how do you think that merger is going to play out here in this world of too many choices?
From Comcast's point of view, from both of their point of view, they are kind of bypassing the problem of content providers versus distribution channels that I was talking about. They're now one and the same type of company. And so they never have to worry about, NBC doesn't have to worry about getting any of their shows onto various Comcast channels or into different homes. The other thing that's interesting about this is it's a classic vertical integration model. And I've been looking at this pattern, if you will, over time. I remember back in, maybe it was in the 80s, when Disney bought Cap Cities ABC. That's how they got ESPN, which makes mm-hmm. them so much money. And a lot of people were wondering, why would they want to do that? But again, you have this kind of connection between the content providers and the distributors. And by the way, you know, when Sony, to kind of broaden it a little further, Sony buys Columbia Pictures, and has, which they now call Sony Pictures, you now have this kind of vertical integration from hardware providers to content, which is kind of software, and distribution. And so it's a pretty interesting value chain that's going on. Does it make sense? They're paying gigantic prices to get control of that, of the various channels and the media. But on the other hand, they're guaranteed that they're going to get access to end customers. So maybe it's that nobody really knows what they're doing, what the right answer should be at the end of the day. But I don't think it solves the bundling problem that I was talking about. The thing that kind of annoys me, you know, when I buy a package of 200 channels, and how many of them am I watching?
20.
Exactly. If that. And I'm not alone. There's a lot of customers like that. And then you look at the internet, and the internet, you can kind of buy what you want. And so people are saying, well, why can't we do that? So it's a serious problem, I think.
So what would your ideal state be? I mean, if you could, is it being able to access any show on the internet? Or is there a world in which you think simply I should be able to pay just for a channel or just for a show? I mean, what do you kind of want it to be?
Yeah, you know, this is a place where I think different strokes for different folks. So someone like me that wants to watch one channel, whatever that might be, and let's say just ESPN or just HBO, I'm willing to pay for it. And of course, I probably will have to pay a little bit more than I'm paying now for that individual channel, but much less than the 200 other channels. Other people will value the curation that a bundle of channels now provides. And they might want the simplicity of doing that. And, you know, for me, this paradox of choice that I was talking about, I'm not so worried about that because I kind of I can look at what's out there and I'll say I want this and this and this, and I don't want 99% of the other junk. But a lot of other people, it's not that they'll think it's junk, but they have wider interest, or it's not worth the effort to figure it out. So why can't we have a model where, if you can't throw away bundling completely, let customers like me buy whatever it is I want and price it like you do for any other product at a level that allows you to make a profit and that generates interest and demand from customers. You can't overprice it. You can't underprice it. What that exact price is, trial and error will get you there.
Great. Thanks.
So nice talking to you about this, Ashley. I think you don't want to share this, though, with your colleagues back in the UK when you're at British Telecom.
I will keep it under lock and key.
Thank you.
This has been Sid Wazin. If you would like to comment on this podcast, follow Professor Finkelstein on Twitter @SidFinkelstein, #SidWazin. Thank you for listening.